Someday we'll fall down and weep, and we'll understand it all. All things.
Guide us to the end of time.
Welcome back, everyone. It's been, how long has it been, Anne?
You know, people do come up to me and say that they miss Oscar talk, and I say, "Come, we're coming back in camp up after the Oscars." That was it.
Yeah, it's been a couple of months. I'm covered in rust, so I'm going to have to shake that off over the course of this podcast. But yes, Anne is in Cannes, and we are joined today by Guy Lodge, who is also
Hello.
In Cannes. Hi, Guy.
Hey.
And we're recording this Thursday morning, so the two of them have not had a chance to see. I think the film they're seeing tonight is Drive.
Yeah, can't wait.
But there's plenty to
discuss. I'm gonna wait until tomorrow night because I got tickets to the gala.
Oh, lucky you!
The price you pay for dressing up in black tie, and seeing Ryan Gosling in all his glory, you know.
Well, we're right in the middle of the festival, and the biggest news.
But it's evening for us.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a list of movies I do want to talk to you guys about, but we should probably just start since the news of the day is Lars von Trier getting spanked by the festival.
That's actually very appropriate, because what they've done is to send out a release that basically censures, you know, it's a load of censure. You know, they're rapping him on the knuckles and telling him he's been a very, very bad boy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I keep fantasizing that this jury, you know, headed by Robert De Niro, you know, is going to rise up in defense of Lars or something, but because it's the movie that matters.
Exactly. And the movie is terrific.
I loved it. I think it's my favorite of the festival. There's an opening sequence in this movie that is to die for. So brilliant.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that. That's definitely at the top of my list.
What I find so funny
is that he was joking at the press conference. Go ahead, Guy.
Well, I think it's really funny how people were almost surprised by how the movie itself wasn't that controversial. It's quite a subtle, restrained film. And I think people came out of the screening sort of expecting to be more outraged, and it's almost as if Lars realized that and sort of went into the press conference to stir up a little bit of controversy.
As you know, he does, and as I imagine the festival knows he does. So it's kind
that's
of
what well, they want had, him to do. That's,
they've had him for 12. They've had 12 of his films here.
Yep.
Yeah, he won the Palme d'Or for Dancer in the Dark, the Prix, you know, for Breaking the Waves. You know, he's really, you know, one of their pet auteurs. And the thing is that Gilles Jacob comes from a tough, unpleasant Jewish background, which is in his new book.
Explain who that is.
Citizen Khan. He used to be the number one head of the camp. Frimo is there, but Gilles Jacob is still the one, you know, helping Thierry and is a very powerful man. And they took what he said very seriously. And I wonder, because the media went and ran with it, even though everyone in the room knew it was just funny. He was just being stupid.
The tone of it got completely mangled on the internet, as it always does. I mean,
Well, you know, it's an awkward sense of humor that Mr. von Trier has. But
he went off to the roundtables today in Mougins, and he went on to say, you know, criticize the why did they overreact, or why did they react so badly to what he said. He says, well, they have a history of treating the Jews really badly in World War II.
Oh, Lars.
Yeah. Frankly, I think what he said about Kirsten Dunst at the press conference was more embarrassing than what he said about Nazis.
What was that?
People were rolling their eyes.
He said that his next film with Kirsten Dunst is going to be a 4-hour porn movie. And she looked she just looked like she wanted to die on the spot right there.
She literally touched his arm and tried to make him stop. And he was just being puckish, you know, and impish. And
it's
he was
he
trying
is.
Shocking. And she's obviously bidding for a serious actress comeback, and she delivers an extraordinary performance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think in the award spectrum for this movie?
What, you mean at Cannes or outside of
it? Outside of Cannes.
I don't think it's going to play outside the sort of art house audience that usually goes for his stuff. It's still a hard sell of a movie, but
it's wonderful though. It's in English and it's really beautiful. And Kirsten Dunst is, I don't know, I think it could be more relatable than you think, because it's also about the end of the world. I mean, it's pretty dramatically sci-fi in a way. And it's so interesting how Tree of Life and this film and another film that's in the Cannes Am called
Take Shelter.
Take Shelter with Michael Shannon. They're all there. And even Another Earth from Sundance. Yeah. They all have these images, this sort of sense of doom, you know, our planet is, you know, something scary is happening, you know, they all do.
Speaking of which, is everyone prepared for the rapture this weekend?
I'm knuckling down, yeah.
Terrence Malick is, let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, good segue. We led off the podcast this week with a little bit of the trailer for The Tree of Life. You know, probably the biggest event of the festival was the revelation of the new Malick film.
Yeah.
It's a film I've seen too, so we can all talk about it. Let's just dive in. What did you think, Guy? You've given your review, but have you had a chance to mull over it further and maybe...
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't... I wanted to get a review up, obviously, for our readers, but it's not really, in an ideal world, the kind of film you should review straight after the screening. But I think... After thinking about it for a few days, I'm still in much the same place. I think it's a very mixed bag of a film. I think there's spectacular sequences. I think there are passages that really don't work. I think it's a very sincere and very, very heartfelt piece. But I think it's his least successful film to date, for my money.
Anne? What about you, Anne?
There's a movie inside the movie, which is this family drama in Texas in the 50s. And the work that he does there with the actors, with Jessica Chastain and especially Brad Pitt and with the boys, the three boys, it is so beautifully done and so good. And there's a part of me that wishes that that he hadn't felt the burden of greatness, that he hadn't. Now, he did take all of this material that he uses for The History of Life, that with the planets and the volcanoes and the dinosaurs and all this. Yep. There is an idea there that he's trying to articulate. Mm-hmm. And I really objected to the way that this material was so similar to 2001.
Yeah.
The way that Douglas Trumbull is used in very much the same way. And it's just too much alike. And the narration is really not very coherent. And I must commend, one of the wonderful things about this festival this year has been that when I came out of that movie, sort of, you know, stunned, a one woman said, "I can't wait to read the reviews on this." And I have to say, you know, reading Richard Corliss, reading Manola Dargis, and Scott Foundas, who got into a lot of the autobiographical elements and nailed those down, you know, it was great fun. It was just as much fun as watching the movie.
It's inspired some wonderful writing.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned the 2001 thing. I didn't think about 2001 for a second when I saw that element of the film. Obviously, a lot of people are mentioning it because of it being Doug Trumbull behind all these effects. I don't know why you would object to it, because I think I think it's a lot of stuff we've never seen before. We've never seen kind of these drastic depictions of essentially the beginning of time.
Go back to 2001.
No, I watched that film. I watched that film a lot, Anne, and I don't think that it's dealing with the same kinds of physics that Terrence Malick is dealing with in this film. It's a lot more cosmic and or a lot more abstract, I guess, in 2001 than it is in The Tree of Life. Because in The Tree of Life, he's employing these tactics in order to show something that, you know, happened. He got together with scientists. How could we, if we're going to visually show this, what does it need to look like? And he wanted to make it as tangible in that way as possible. And so I've been kind of, you know, I get that people are bringing it up in their reviews, but I kind of feel like it's taking on a larger life in the reviews than it really needs to. I just did not grasp that connection as much as everyone else did. Although I know that it was probably a purposeful connection, because he hired Trumbull for a reason to have that kind of a bridge. But, you know, I don't know. It's just, they're two different kinds of sequences to me. But in any case,
I ended up agreeing with Manala. Her final point was that she admired Malick's vision more than his philosophizing.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote a great review. I agree with that. I think it's one of her best.
Yeah,
she really nailed it.
Definitely. Yeah. And I'm with you on the family story too. I think that is actually the best part of the film, is the intimacy that he gets into with this family. It really harkens back to his early work that was obviously, in the Bert Schneider days, more controlled and contained. I still think his best film is The Thin Red Line. I somehow think that film became a perfect storm that just, despite the miles of footage he shot and the craziness of editing it and whittling it down, it doesn't have the scars to me that The Tree of Life clearly has, because obviously Sean Penn was meant to be in that film much more than he is ultimately.
One thing I commended Corliss for was seeing it a second time before he wrote about it. And by the way, one of the discussions on the Quasette is that Todd McCarthy saw the film before Cannes, which is how he was able to get his Variety review up so damn fast, but and thoughtfully. So, I mean, it was not a rushed job. So I would like to see the film again.
Yeah, I plan on seeing it again, actually, probably by the time this goes up, because they're screening it quite a bit in L.A.
Yeah.
I could not have seen it twice in one day, though. There was someone.
No, I think you need to let it sit for a while before and sort of see which elements land with you.
Yeah,
land with you more than others before revisiting it.
And I have a question for you. I find myself, because I don't think this is a very big awards play, and I find myself wondering, not wondering, but because Searchlight is very good to artists, but it's an intriguing decision for them to pick this up. Do they want to be in business with Malick? Is it kind of a relationship thing? Why do you think they picked this up? Because everyone said no to this movie, you know?
Yeah, they believed in it. I think that they are willing to throw an art film into the mix. They can afford to do that. Yeah. And I think that they believe in doing that, and I applaud them for it. I know they genuinely love this movie and wanted to give it a shot. I do think that Brad Pitt, if they do play their card, an outside chance. He's overdue. He's quite
loved. Do you think so?
It is his best performance today.
I don't agree with that.
Well, the performance or the Oscar possibility?
Both. I mean, really? I think he's fine in the film, but I think it's mainly a symbolic character. I don't think he has a lot of room to flex with it.
I thought it was fantastic.
Oh my gosh, I very much disagree with you. I think he's very good. I think he digs in. I think there's a lot going on. I think there's a moment in the film where he and his son have finally sort of deal toward the end of the movie and actually communicate with each other directly and honestly, that brought me to tears. And I don't think that would have happened if there hadn't been an awful lot of material, you know, that he was transmitting, a lot of conflicts about love and anger, a lot of his inability to communicate, you know, appropriately with his kids, that maybe I have a father like that. Maybe it had something to do with my own, you know, being brought up in that period, but it definitely, you know, I think there's a lot going on there.
Well, I'll say I didn't have a father. I don't have a father like that, but I felt that the emotion of that performance very much. I thought, I agree with Guy's wording, you know, about something being a symbolic character as it pertains to Jessica Chastain. I don't think she had as much to navigate.
I couldn't agree more. She's better in that other movie,
Take Shelter. Yeah.
But as far as Brad Pitt is concerned, I just thought it's wonderfully internalized. There's just so much going on underneath the surface there that I thought was fascinating.
I'm just not sure, aside from Emmanuel Lubezki, who surely is, you know, in
I would like to think that he's going to be in contention,
I just don't think the film is going to be a major awards play at all.
Yeah.
And the music won't be able to, because so much
it's
of
overshadowed.
It is source film. Yeah.
It's funny. I was told months ago that that Alexandre Desplat had been sort of telling people on the Harry Potter set, you know, don't expect miracles with the score. It's Terrence Malick, as he always does, using existing pieces.
And taking whatever it was that Alexandre did compose yeah. and kind of cutting it to his fancy, you know.
Yeah, insulating it. It works beautifully, but
yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, von Trier's use of Tristan and Isolde I thought was brilliant in Melancholia. Yes, it was really great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, since you guys are fresh off of the Pedro Almodovar, let's talk about that one next.
I was disappointed in this. It is a new direction for him. He's playing around with the thriller genre, and he's having some fun with it and trying to mix it up. And I thought Antonio Banderas was very good in that the transgender kind of psychotic, crazy story was fun to watch. But there is stuff in there that is so Looney Tunes and silly that it threw me out of the movie. Mm.
I think it's a qualified success. He does exactly what I wanted him to do after Broken Embraces, which I thought was really a kind of treading water exercise. And I wanted him to try something new and try something a bit dangerous. And this is that. And it's kind of the culmination of all his kind of preoccupations with sexuality and physicality and all kind of in one package, kind of pushed to the most extreme place he can take it. But I agree with Anne that it doesn't. Some will find it ludicrous, and there isn't enough kind of emotional.
He doesn't back it up.
It.
He does. Yeah. Yeah. No, there's stuff where these two of these characters turn out to be brothers, and one character turns out to be the mother of the brothers, and you're sort of it's almost like your jaw drops because there's absolutely no reason for it, you know. Yeah. It's like coming from another place, you know. Mm-hmm. This isn't Douglas Sirk. This isn't melodramatic 50s movies.
Well,
you know?
No,
there's something very contemporary about it, really.
Why can't it be Douglas Sirk? And Almodovar's always, you know, dabbled in melodrama, but.
But I do you think what I just mentioned worked in the film?
I'm reluctant to talk about it too much because it is.
No, I don't want to give too much away. Yeah.
Twist-driven film, but I think the exposition is quite badly handled. But I don't mind the actual kind of content of those twists. I've always liked his very florid kind of melodramatic styling. The way it's kind of juxtaposed here with very nasty, kind of almost Cronenbergian sort of body horror thriller is interesting. But I'm still, you know, it's only been a few hours since the screening. I'm still figuring out.
Yeah, I haven't written about it yet. Yeah. No, I was, even when I was listening to the press conference, because I was open-minded about it, I as he was talking about what he thought he was doing, I found myself sort of going, nah, I don't think you pulled this off, Pedro.
What's kind of extraordinary about it, though, is the female lead, Elena Anaya, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
Who is, she took the role, I think, after Penelope Cruz was unavailable, and is styled to look so like Penelope Cruz, and there's even an in-joke regarding her name, that it's really uncanny.
That got a
it makes
big
you wonder
laugh.
That director and Penelope are meant to be together, clearly. He's obviously not happy without her.
She would have been amazing, and I think it would have been a very different movie with her, actually.
Well, speaking of Penelope Cruz, since we're on the topic, Anne, did you suffer through Pirates of the Caribbean?
I actually got up early for the 8:30 screening,
oh, okay.
Even though I didn't even go to the last Pirates movie. You know, it wasn't as bad as I was expecting.
Oh.
That's all I can say. It's terrible, you know, but there's something about the money they spend and the way that the actors are just mugging, and the beauty that they actually managed to mount up there. It's terrible. It's awful. But you could sit there in the Palais and sort of, you know, sit back and marvel at how much money they were spending and be horrified if you wanted to be. But I don't know how to explain it. It wasn't as horrible as the last one I saw.
Maybe it's just better if you see it in Cannes, because I thought it was abysmal. I mean, absolutely, just insultingly bad, and whatever. I told Guy to stay away.
Second, strenuously to the fact that they actually put it in the festival, which I think is just a crock. And I understand why they wanted Johnny and Penelope to walk up the red steps and give a press conference and all of that. But I was pretty appalled that that was in the festival. It shouldn't
well, they
have
always have some kind of crappy big budget summer thing, don't they? Or do they?
There's always something. I mean, they had Robin Hood last year. And, I've no dog in this fight since Chris gave me the morning off with that one.
Yeah, I had seen it the night before. I said, just don't bother. I'll write about it. Well, there's a couple of other movies here I wanted to briefly touch on.
Also, just one thing, sorry, about Pirates. Is it, since it kind of ties in, it's true, isn't it, that Penelope Cruz was originally going to star in Melancholia and then did Pirates instead? That's,
I didn't know that.
That's what I've heard.
Interesting. Well, bad choice, Penelope. But she was literally the only thing that kept me paying attention the whole time because, as I said in my review, the placement of her crucifix necklace was spot on.
I'm happy for you, Chris. But actually, I thought it was a bromance with the three men. I thought that she was kind of extra and extraneous as much as she sort of, you know.
As so many blockbusters
stuck in there.
Poor Ian McShane.
And I was horrified by the mermaids with whips. That was my worst. That was the low point for me.
Mermaids?
Yeah.
Now I almost want to see it. I want to see the mermaids with whips.
Yeah, well, go ahead, guy. Now you're free to do so. Well, let's talk about the first movie that kind of sparked a lot of praise was the Lynn Ramsey film. We need to talk about Kevin.
Still my favorite film in competition so far.
Seems to be a good possibility for the Palm.
And at the top of my list, a very top of my list until Melancholia.
Yeah, it's a wonderful film. Tilda Swinton is extraordinary in it. I think this is going to get her that Best Actress nomination that's been sort of floated for the last 2 years, first for Julia and then for I Am Love. I think she's just too good in this one in a reasonably accessible film to ignore. And
I'm afraid
film.
It's not accessible enough, though, Guy. I'm really concerned. I mean, there's a reason why there hasn't been a distributor for it yet.
That was going to be my next question. Do you expect anyone
An
to
Oscar
come
campaign
calling?
Is going to cost money, you know? And I've been really trying to sort of knock around and see. I thought maybe Roadside would be a good candidate for it, but they're very concerned about how they can. You know, it's about a mother and child relationship that is fraught and dysfunctional, and basically she's got a demon seed, you know. And as good as Tilda is, and I agree with you completely, and I want her to get what she deserves here in terms of recognition. I'm just very concerned about who's going to step up.
Sometimes it takes a little while, though.
They may have to raise money. They may have to raise money for, you know, a P&A campaign and an Oscar campaign in order
to
make
it. Well, you know, look, this time last year we were probably saying the exact same things about Beautiful, and it took a little while for it to be picked up, and then Javier got his nomination. So.
And that was Roadside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
in just that kind of scenario.
There's another film. I'm sorry, go ahead, Guy.
The one thing I'll say is, the one thing that's difficult about it is, well, the story is reasonably, and it's based on a best-selling book, and it's pretty accessible in that department. The way Lynn Ramsey has styled it as this very kind of fractured tone poem is going to keep it in the art house, and it's brilliant what she does. But it's, and Anne's right. It is a hard sell in that respect.
And there's another film that seems to be a good play for the Palm so far. It's the Karasmaki film. Have the two of you seen that?
I still have not seen.
And I haven't either, Guy. You make me feel better. That was the morning I couldn't get up.
What are you hearing about it?
I think we were
both doing karaoke the night before, as I recall.
That is our excuse. And since then, I've tried to get into two subsequent screenings, one in the market and one day after, and they've just been oversubscribed to the max. But I'm going to see it on Sunday.
Let me know when you're going. I'll go with you.
Yeah, because on the last day, they rescreen all the competition films, and I'm not going to miss that one because I'm convinced it's going to win something.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I hear it's one of the sort of few kind of heartwarming films in competition. Everyone just likes it, you know, which is... Mm-hmm. And it's...
Well, the other one would be the Artist, wouldn't it?
The Artist, which is, just
which
delightful.
I did catch.
Oh, have you seen it?
And it's just as delightful as everybody says.
Yeah, yeah. I'm fascinated by that one because that Weinstein picked that up right, I guess, before it screened. They announced
Correct.
A pickup of that.
Very smart purchase, I think.
Why do you say that?
Because it's, on the one hand, it seems like a very kind of obscure, niche kind of project. It is an almost silent film in black and white. It's very much just playing to a cineast audience, but it's got real emotional weight to it. It's very, very funny. It's very moving, and it's got a star performance in it by this guy Jean Dujardin that is. It's going to play very, very well on the kind of crossover art house circuit.
It'll be a hit. It'll actually be a hit. And it's very Singing in the Rain, you know, without there's a musical number, but it's not key until late in the day. But it's very, it communicates everything that you need to know, even without titles. And John Goodman is very good in it also. And they're all speaking English, which is so interesting. It's a French movie, and he is actually a French actor. But everybody's speaking. You can read their lips pretty easily. It's really easy to understand them. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, and this guy is just fantastic. He's got that kind of George Clooney magnetism that just sells the whole film. It's great.
Another one on my list here: The Kid with the Bike. Guy seemed to be a bit slightly reserved on that one.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I loved it. It just sold. I would say that perhaps one reason why Guy, you should say yourself, but the thing about the Jardin brothers is that they always do something fairly similar. And this is back to their sort of the core of what they do. It's very small. It's very minimal. It's about really a two-character piece, a woman who's adopting, you know, a foster kid who's very troubled. But it is so well done and so moving. I was in tears through much of the movie, and I think that the problem for critics is coming up with anything new to say about what the Dardens do. They do it really well, but they do it over and over and over again.
That's where I am with it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's almost nothing wrong with it. I think there's some kind of little characterization issues, but it's you know, they are the most kind of humane, empathetic filmmakers. It's a perfect example of their craft.
I'm glad I saw it.
But at the same time, I thought their last film, Lorna Silence, which wasn't entirely a success, but did kind of move into slight genre territory. It had a slightly higher concept pitch, and it wasn't received as well as their previous ones. So I feel like they've kind of withdrawn.
They retreated
to a kind of safe place, but I would have been interested to see them try that kind of pursue that vein of filmmaking a little further instead of just kind of, you know, giving up after one sort of mixed success.
They remind me a little bit of the filmmaker from England, Ken Loach, you know, who does the same kind of thing.
Was a Ken Loach movie for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that there's nothing wrong with it, honestly. I think it's more of an issue for people who try to write about it. But it did get picked up by Sundance Selects. So
yeah, I think it will do reasonably well. It's slightly sunnier than their usual than their sort of bleakest films. It's still quite hard urban realism, but it's got a slightly more redemptive sort of arc to it.
It's a nice film.
You know, it's one it could play to anyone. You could take your grandmother to see it. It's pleasant, but I think it's missing a little bit of kind of moxie to it.
I haven't had a chance to pop into a screening of the new Woody Allen film, Midnight in Paris, but that opened the festival and seemed to be relatively well received.
Very well, very well. It's probably the most top of the chart of all the critics' responses, isn't it?
Is it?
it there. I'm one of those charts.
I know a lot of people who like it. I don't know many people who absolutely love it.
It's just is it just generally agreeable then? Is that what we're kind of getting
it's
around
magic,
to?
It's magic, Woody. It's Paris. Fluffy, it's romantic. It's beautiful. It's it's entertaining. It's accessible. It's much more fun than I would say any Woody Allen film in the last 14 years. My last really good Woody Allen movie, to my mind, is Deconstructing Harry.
And, really? That
and
far
I think
back.
He's been treading water. Yeah, he's been treading water for a long time, in my view.
I loved Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
I don't think it's as good as Vicky Cristina.
The only reason that movie took off was because of Penelope Cruz and Javier Bardem, and I defy that anyone to like that movie without them.
No, I think there's something in the soul of that movie. I think it's actually speaking to some truth that I appreciated, but that's a discussion for 2008.
I will say there's one actor in Midnight in Paris who I think really deserves to be singled out, and I haven't heard of him before, and I've suddenly forgotten his last name. It's Corey. He plays Ernest Hemingway.
He's a theater actor that Woody saw on Broadway and brought him on Hemingway, and I agree that he breaks and out in this. He's really quite
he
good.
He is Corey Stoll, he's called, I see here, and he is just spectacular in it. He has all the biggest laughs. His Ernest Hemingway, the way he delivers his lines in the kind of mannerisms of Hemingway prose, and it's a tiny genius performance, I think.
Sony Classics is releasing that this month. Is there anything there that can survive through to the Oscar season?
He could get a writing nomination for this. I mean, the Academy, when Woody delivers, tends to give him, he's like Mike Lee. I mean, they tend to give him a writing nomination.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I could see it. If it turns out to be a weak writing field, he could hang around. But that, and I think nothing more.
I agree.
And the other thing on my list here, before I'll ask if there's anything that you might want to talk about we haven't spoken on, is probably the film that I'm most intrigued to see outside of Melancholia, and Guy, I see, was a fan, Sleeping Beauty.
I'm going to beg to differ on that one.
Oh, I think please debate and fight.
Well, it's not a new filmmaker out of New Zealand or Australia. I guess it's Australia. And she, Julia Lee, has been a novelist, and so she's really a first time filmmaker, championed by Jane Campion, mentored by Jane Campion, and looking, it has a very serene sort of gorgeously composed shots. She keeps her distance from the audience. She's not engaging the audience. She's throwing around these ideas about this woman that played very well. I liked the girl, Emily Browning. She's giving you not enough information and so what happens, and this is the exact opposite of the Dardennes, what happens is that it gives critics a field day, you know, because they can just make everything up. They can just make up what this movie's about. And, it, you know, the audience is left completely in the dark.
Make up what this movie is about. What do you mean by that? Just kind of projecting?
I have never heard so many men honestly telling me what was going on in the mind of this woman that I totally disagreed with. It is so interesting. It's like a Rorschach test, because she doesn't tell you. You have to figure it out
for
yourself.
For me, that's fascinating. And I don't know, it's kind of valid if there's multiple perspectives on something. I mean, I could... I'm just extrapolating from what you're saying, but just, you know, some of my favorite movies are the things that I came away with something that just as equal fans totally didn't see.
I think there are various ways to read it. I don't think anyone should say that, you know, they have the definitive read on the movie. I mean, I saw it as a kind of allegory for how we've separated ideas of sex from ideas of human contact. But that's what I got out of it. I think it's kind of a mirror for, you know, for your own kind of concerns in that way. I found it actually surprisingly, even though it's a very kind of frigid, chilly, formal film, I found it quite moving in that way.
I can't say that. Interesting.
It is a deliberately obtuse film. It's true, and it's not, I mean, if it, I'll be surprised if it gets much US distribution at all. But it's not going to break out of the art house at all. But I've had more kind of stimulating conversations about that film than just about any other here, because it does divide people kind of down the middle.
That's right. And there's enough unknowns there to you know, inspire a great deal of, for example, one guy was saying to me, this girl who basically is you know, making a living in some ways as a prostitute, she's got confidence. You know, and I went, she's lost. She's completely lost. She's not confident at all. And that's the kind of movie it is, where you can have that kind of, that's, to me, that means that the filmmaker, if the actress ends up having a lack of affect, if the character is supposed to be sort of a tabula rasa, that we really don't know, that the filmmaker doesn't give us enough information to know what really is going on at all.
I think, well, there are things in it that I don't think it's an entire success. I think it's kind of overdetermined in some ways, even visually as well, even though it kind of looks great. But I think she's an exciting visual storyteller, which, considering she's a novelist, is unexpected. And I think she might make one hell of a second feature. So
that's
I've kind of got my eye on her.
Yes, I agree. A lot of people seem to feel that way. So it's a great concept for a movie, but it isn't really, you know. And then the other movie that had a great concept was the Nanni Moretti. And I like a lot of his films. Yeah, exactly. Here he is. You know, the shrink is going to go into the inner sanctum and try to talk the Pope off the ledge of not wanting to be the Pope. It's such a great concept, and he throws it away completely. Just completely blows it.
I can't wait to see this. I mean, you're making me want to see it even more, honestly.
No, but I don't think anybody's going to pick that up. I don't think it did very well with anyone, really.
I could imagine if
he ends up playing soccer with Cardinals.
I was speaking about Sleeping Beauty, actually, but was there anything else that you guys wanted to talk about from the festival so far? Anything that's,
I will say, two American films I've seen here, which kind of caught my attention. The one obviously has already had a lot of attention at Sundance, Martha May Marcy Marlene.
Mm-hmm.
Which, did it win an award at Sundance, or was it just a critic's favorite? I can't remember now.
It did very well at Sundance. I'd have to look that up.
A really remarkable debut feature with a spectacular breakthrough performance for Elizabeth Olsen, the sister that got away. and I'm really excited to see how that does, because it's Searchlight has taken it, but it's not their usual. Not their usual fodder. It's quite a prickly, difficult, and very frightening film.
Maybe Searchlight's getting a little more brave as of late with this and with
good for them.
The Terrence Malick. What was the other American film?
And another American film that I saw in Director's Fortnight called Return. A small kind of war at home story about a female soldier returning from duty and kind of having trouble adjusting to life back into Middle America. It's a very familiar kind of story, but it's got Linda Cardellini, the actress from Freaks and Geeks and ER a few years ago. She carries it just beautifully, and I could almost imagine if some distributor would, a kind of roadside size distributor, would take it on, there would be at the very least an Independent Spirit Award nomination in it for her, because she is superb in it.
Yeah, IndieWire did a nice story on her. Yeah. I'm going to have to catch up with that one.
Yeah. It's also got Michael Shannon in it and John Slattery from Mad Men, who's hilarious. That was a surprise. I wasn't expecting that one.
So did you get to see Take Shelter?
I did, yes.
Yeah, that's the other American film that I think
I liked it. I liked it very much.
Good. Yeah.
It's sort of like the best M. Night Shyamalan movie as well. That he never made, you know.
It's exactly. It's really, and there's two films now that have birds falling dead out of the sky as well, and two films about someone who's, you know, basically losing their mind, you know, as they go. So that it's very interesting in that way. Shannon's very good.
Mm. And Jessica Chastain, who I've been sort of wondering, I don't really know her that well, and suddenly she's just coming up in scenes about sort of 10 films at once. And this was the first time I saw her where I thought, oh, okay, I kind of see what's going on with her now. She's very strong in it.
Yeah, better than The Debt, better than Tree of Life. This is the role that really shows what she can do. Yeah.
I also saw in Coriolanus at Berlin, in which she doesn't have enough to really kind of show.
And she's coming up in the Al Pacino movie in Venice. She does Shakespeare with him.
Oh, that's right.
She comes from the New York stage, I believe.
Well, she must have one hell of an agent because she's she's just everywhere.
Salome is what it is. Oscar Wilde Salome in Venice.
Upcoming Venice. Yeah, which has a killer lineup, it looks like.
I'm reconsidering. I said I would definitely return to Telluride, but that story isn't entirely based on confirmed accepted titles. It's more of a wish list.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good cross-section, I think, of the festival so far. What's left other than Drive? That's the Nicholas Winding Refn film.
Yes, we have... Paolo Sorrentino film, This Must Be the Place, with Sean Penn, which I, for some reason, have a bad feeling about.
That's because there's been some bad buzz about it, and people are saying it's not good. But by the way, I liked Restless. I liked the Gus Van Sant. I thought it was, it was lovely.
Guy disagrees with that, I believe.
I know, but I had been told it was really bad. I'd been told it was terrible. So just to put it in the right context, it's a very small, fragile little movie that in anyone else's hands could have been really bad. And I thought it ended up being kind of a delicate success.
It is really bad. I think it's the worst film Gus Van Sant has made, I've got to say. I think it's just insipid.
It's a romance. It's a romance between a very young Mia Wasikowska, who's a cancer patient, and a young guy played by Dennis Hopper's son, Henry Hopper, who's young, very young.
It's not for teenagers. It's exactly that template.
I think it's very small and very precise. I swear to you. I'm a sucker for his directing. That's part of it. I love the way he directs.
I like him too. I just didn't see much of him in this. I thought it seemed like a higher job. I saw more Ron Howard in it than Gus Van Sant.
It's really Ron Howard's daughter.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I love the press notes for it. Bryce Dallas Howard saying several producers showed interest, but the one that showed the most interest happened to be my dad's company. which is quite an extraordinary coincidence.
Oh boy.
Oh, well, there's notes. A reason it ended up with Sony Pictures Classics. I mean, that's appropriate.
Well, you know, I very much appreciate the education on what's out there right now. I did want to briefly, before we cut this short, and maybe you can tell me if you want to save it for whenever our next off-season entry will be, but the year so far, if there's anything worth even discussing, what's been released.
I am very high on Win-Win and Jane Eyre, but I can't say that I've been able to rouse a lot of support in many quarters. Given that they really didn't if you look, they did generate good reviews. I just think it's going to be a tall order to bring them back in any meaningful way for a screenplay nomination or for a performance for Mia Wasikowska. But what do you think, Guy?
I'm still waiting to see both of them, actually. Win-Win has been screening, was screening in London the week before I left, but I missed it. And Jane Eyre is just still kind of far from a UK release. I don't know why they're waiting so long with that one. So
but
I'm excited
really
to see them both.
Come up so far, really.
I'm trying to think, like,
there's really
what there's been this year. And there have been a few kind of festival films from last year that I saw then that kind of finally made their way over, like Meek's Cutoff and a Certified mm-hmm. Copy. But as much as
it's
I love them, I don't
happen.
See them really carrying
no.
over.
No,
yeah, I've not seen Win-Win or Jane Eyre yet. I meant to see Win-Win this week, but I didn't get around to it. That, yeah. If anything, that seems to be something that could, being that it's that is a Searchlight title, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the, you know.
Yeah. It is, yeah. And you know, you can't discount, you know, their ability to. I mean, I don't think Hannah will ever be taken seriously. Yeah.
I liked Hannah very much, though.
Did you? I just saw that recently. I appreciated that he broke out of kind of that stagnant thing he seemed to kind of be entering into and do something a bit more aggressively artistic.
Yeah.
But I didn't like the movie very much. I
was
liked,
surprised by it.
I like Saoirse Ronan very much, but it did just, you know, reek of the Bourne Identity to me the whole time. So
I will say that from what I've seen this year, I mean, in the year when Pixar will probably kind of release their stranglehold on the animation Oscar, it's been quite a good year so far already for.
Yeah,
Rango's
my favorite, probably my favorite movie that I've seen.
Rango
it's perceived as a failure, however.
Yeah,
Rango is.
Yeah.
As a financial failure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's seen as something that was, you know, I mean, I think it's stunningly visually gorgeous, mm-hmm. but it is seen as something outside the animation community. I mean, I'd just be very curious, you know, visual effects people made it. In other words, mm-hmm. I'd just be very curious to know if the animation community would back that film.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I liked Rio as well, actually. I keep getting those titles kind of muddled up, but I thought Rio was, you know, completely down the line, nothing new, nothing adventurous, but just beautifully done and plays really well. That's...
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that yet.
Me neither.
I did see Thor.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Thor is going to be a huge Oscar contender.
All the way down the line. I did like the movie, though. But
I liked Thor. I think it's fun.
Cheesy fun, yes.
Yeah.
And there's so many blockbusters now that are kind of cynical and joyless, and this one actually feels like sincerely like everyone involved was having a good time.
Actually, you know, which, it also plays as though they worked hard to make it as good as they could, and I think they pulled it off quite well, yeah. Actually.
And I think Chris Hemsworth is a star. I think he has something.
Great.
Yeah.
It, besides his good looks.
I mean, I think there's so many actors. I mean, I can imagine if they're. Put like, I don't know, Paul Walker or someone in there where it would have just been a complete blank slate, and the film would have been so much duller without him, because he has charisma.
Speaking of Paul Walker, you know, the latest Oscar blogger on the beat is Vin Diesel, and he says we should all look to Fast Five to be a big Oscar movie, and I think we should
listen
to this
guy. One of the best reviewed movies of the year.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but...
I saw it. It's kind of fun on either end, and then you can leave for about half an hour in the middle. That's...
Well, that's good to know. All right. Well, this was informative and whets the appetites, I'm sure. We'll get back to another one of these off-season entries at some point down the line.
There's one movie that will not be in the Oscar race that was shown here at Cannes, and that would be The Beaver. Safe to say.
Yeah, probably safe to say, which is, you know.
And
I heard
Gibson
he did an
talked.
Interview or something,
he,
yeah.
He did it with Variety.
Yeah.
And he said nothing.
Oh, really?
I would just like to say, for the record, that Cannes is okay with Mel Gibson, but Lars von Trier is persona non grata.
There we are.
This is true. Because we have a movie star in the case. They will forgive anyone who's a movie star on that red carpet. They live and breathe for that.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, well, we'll close it off there. Thanks again, you two, and enjoy the rest of the festival.
We will.
I will see you when you're back here, Anne.
When do you want to do this next?
I don't know. I guess when we have something to talk about, the summer's looking bleak. The summer ahead, anyway. I don't know. Maybe sometime
maybe
in July.
Maybe we should reconnoiter right before. Yeah, right before the, you know, get together before we start talking about the next set of festivals.
Yeah, that'll work. We'll look for that then, okay. Everyone, and talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Bye.
Bye-bye.